From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on This Day in Maine, Monday, February 5th, 2018. And on this day, we'll look at the state's proposal to close 5 county jails in the state and reaction to it. And we'll go to a company in Guilford that sells medical products and ice cream sticks all over the world. That's all ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by New England Rehabilitation Hospital of Portland, helping patients and their families after illness or injury. Learn more at nerhp.org. And by Lee Auto Malls, 4 generations serving Mainers since 1936, 19 Maine locations, and at leeauto.com.
With no advance notice to county sheriffs and few details, the Maine Department of Corrections has announced a plan to overhaul the state's county jail system, close 5 jails, and create a new oversight commission to manage those that remain. The proposal was contained in a report released on Friday, mandated in the budget approved last July. Mal Leary has more.
The department is recommending a 2-tiered system of oversight for the jails. The first tier would be a newly created Maine Jail Commission, with control over all of the jails statewide. In addition, the plan calls for the creation of 3 regional jail authorities and the elimination of 5 existing county jails.
I think that there is a savings opportunity in better communication, better cooperation between the Department of Corrections and our county jail system.
State Representative Marty Grohman, an independent from Biddeford and a member of the Criminal Justice Committee, says it's a plan worth considering and that he's talked with the governor about it.
There is a real problem that the Department of Corrections and the governor are trying to take on with this report, which is that they feel as though they're sending checks off into the ether. They don't have a result. You know, we're paying a bill. We don't know what we paid for.
The proposal was sent to the committee last week, but not to the county sheriffs. Cumberland County Sheriff Kevin Joyce, the president of the Sheriff's Association, says it's still not clear how the plan would achieve the millions in savings it says would result by closing the jails in Androscoggin, Oxford, Washington, Franklin, and Piscataquis counties.
You know, the voodoo math, you know, we could save money, we couldn't save money. That plan really does not suggest where that savings is. It just suggests that if you do X, Y will happen.
Joyce says inmates will have to be housed somewhere, and that has a cost. He says the report fails to address what he sees as the biggest problem facing the system, which is that 60% of the inmates are waiting for their trial.
We've implemented as many things as we possibly can to save money. You know, it costs money to put people in jail. People like to get tough on crime. And my mantra, at least in Cumberland County, has been, you can get tough on crime, but there's a cost with that.
Republican Senator Kim Rosen of Bucksport, who co-chairs the Criminal Justice Committee, says she is confused by some of the findings of the report and needs time to review the recommendations. She and co-chair Representative Charlotte Warren, a Democrat from Hollowell, hopes that the department will make someone available to discuss the report. Warren says jail funding is an issue that's not going to go away.
What our sheriffs are telling us is we need help. We need help with this system. We need help with the programs we're trying to run. We need help with the jails we're trying to run.
Most on the committee agree that the current 2-year state budget doesn't include enough money for the jails, and simply dropping a report on the desks of the committee is not going to solve the problem. Corrections Commissioner Joe Fitzpatrick could not be reached for comment on the new jail structure proposal. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
The University of Maine is defending the initial award of a $100 million contract to provide renewable energy to its Orono campus. That's after the Portland Press Herald raised questions about insider influence. But as Fred Bever reports, the university is also conducting a new audit of the bidding process.
Last June, a university team chose an affiliate of the Con Edison Company as the winning bidder over 3 other finalists for the multi-year energy contract. That didn't seal the deal, but it did mean that Con Ed and the university would enter negotiations over a final contract. On Sunday, the Press Herald's Maine Sunday Telegram published an article suggesting that a University of Maine executive, Jake Ward, improperly communicated with and coached Con Ed's team during the bidding process. The story was based on what it called secret recordings, including a conference call in which former House Speaker John Richardson asserted that the University of Maine's Jake Ward told Con Ed officials that the contract had been, quote, set up for you to do well. Ward denied having anything to do with the process, known as the Request for Proposals, or RFP, and university officials are sticking by him. Jim Phelan is the university's chief of staff and chief counsel.
We made a determination that the information reported in the Portland Press Herald was not credible and was not verifiable. But because of concern that of the public integrity of our RFP process, we will be reviewing the matter and reviewing the information further with the board's audit committee, which is an extra step. It's not a step that would normally occur.
The Press Herald article also brought to light some possible connections between University Chancellor James Page and the project. Until 2012, Page was CEO of J.W. Sewell Co. That's an Old Town engineering firm, some of whose principals, according to the Press Herald, were at one point involved with efforts to purchase the former Old Town Mill. The mill would provide renewable energy to the university under the Con Ed proposal. University counsel Jim Phelan says he will tell the audit committee that Chancellor Page has no conflict of interest.
He has no role in the RFP process or approval of the contract. The board has to do that. But whether the board or the audit committee determines that there should be any direct steps taken to insulate him will be up to that committee.
John Richardson, now a Brunswick lawyer and consultant, did not immediately respond to requests for comment. The university's audit committee is set to consider the integrity of the process on Friday. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
So, when the doctor tells you to open up and say, ah, pretty much anywhere in the world, there's a chance that the wooden stick pressing on your tongue was made in Maine. And the wooden stick in that creamsicle, also probably from Maine. In the next installment of our series, you can get it there from here. Jennifer Mitchell visits a facility in Guilford where the recipe for global success combines secret machines, better technology, and even a dash of bad luck.
Hardwood Products LP in Guilford has something of a split personality. The company is divided into two operations, one right across the road from the other. On the one side, there's Hardwood Products, LLC.
99% of the ice cream sticks are 4.5 inches. This happens to be a special order for 5.5.
Over here, it's all noisy trucks and bark flying off logs, while a suite of singular machines churns out flat birchwood sticks at a rate of about 1,200 per minute. On the other side of the road...
This is a microbiology lab where we have... products that we make here as well.
This is Puritan Medical, where you're more likely to see folks running around in white coats. Both halves have played a role in Hardwood's success. But first, let's go back in time. Both sides of the company have been around for almost 100 years, from a time when forest industries were booming and Maine was billing itself as the toothpick capital of the world.
When my grandfather first bought this property, there was a little box mill out at the end here. And they just made a little company with, I believe, 6 or 8 gentlemen making wooden boxes.
That's third-generation owner and vice president James Cartwright. He's been with the company for 40 years. His grandfather started the Minto Toothpick Company in 1919, which then became Hardwood Products about a year later. In 1928, the company started making its first medical items, tongue depressors. And for decades, things went well.
And then the whole facility burned flat in 1958, completely flat. Office, warehouses, complete manufacturing. The only thing that was standing was the smokestack.
The original 1919 biomass boiler made it through as well, and they still use it today to heat the plant. The mill fire turned out to be a blessing in disguise, says Cartwright, because the family was forced to build a new plant, one that was not only fireproof, but designed with time and motion efficiency in mind. Their competitors were not so unlucky.
They just kept running the old facilities, weren't very efficient, and that raises their cost up, and that's what that's what helped put them out of business when China came with lower pricing. China was coming over and selling ice cream sticks cheaper than, for example, we could make them. So we had to depend on all of our other products to get through that tough 20 years.
Hardwood Products is the only manufacturer of ice cream sticks left in the U.S., and the orders are rolling in at last, says Cartwright, thanks in no small part to a whole room of mechanisms that we can't show you or describe in too much detail, such as this machine that's grating and sorting newly minted ice cream sticks at a rate of 20 per second, a process once done by hand.
And these are our sorters that we designed, manufactured here, so these are really proprietary machinery, and there's no patent on the patent is secrecy.
By designing and building its own secret technology, Cartwright says the company has been able to produce the same quality birchwood stick of decades past, but shrink the price gap to within 10 or 15% of what Asian manufacturers can offer, and it's paying off. This bunch of sticks shooting out of this top secret machine is part of the company's first official order going to a major international buyer.
They tested us last fall. I think it was August. We ended up shipping the product in October, and that was our first run, check our quality, prove, who we said we were. We passed with flying colors.
Costa Rican dairy cooperative Dos Pinos, which sells some 600 different products across Central America and the Caribbean, found Hardwood Products via the company's website. Now it plans to buy at least 70 million ice cream sticks this year. Across the street, Puritan Medical has been pushing its specialized medical products into the global marketplace as well. In addition to millions upon millions of stick applicators and tongue depressors, they've developed an especial niche in the world of swabs, some wooden, some not. Director of Regulatory Affairs and Quality Assurance Paul Duby says the company has aggressively marketed its swabs from Germany to Dubai.
We have contacts that go out all over the globe to turn over the rocks and find these business opportunities for us. The other thing is it's kind of a small world in swabs. There aren't a lot of companies that do what we do. It's not as simple as it looks sometimes. There's a lot of quality requirements that go into it, a tremendous number of regulatory requirements.
Hardwood now ships its Puritan products to 58 different countries, from Afghanistan to Zimbabwe. But as with the ice cream stick business, there is still one very hard nut to crack. Puritan Vice President Timothy Templett says it's been a challenge trying to sell directly to China and its 1.4 billion citizens.
The government has to approve you as a supplier. Today, we have spent over $100,000 to meet their standards, and they keep moving the mark. And at this point in time, we have given that up.
To be allowed into China, Templett says the company would be forced to demonstrate exactly how each product is made, essentially sharing the secret recipe for its success. And for a company that's been kept afloat by 100 years of patent secrecy, Templett says, nah. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Jennifer Mitchell.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Monday, February 5th, 2018. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team, I'm Nora Flaherty.